It's a modest attempt to tighten loopholes in gun laws. Still, reaction to the president's executive actions has been swift. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. House Speaker Paul Ryan calls the president's actions to limit gun violence a dangerous level of executive overreach. Today, Stephen Schmidt of Iowa State University and Rachel Caulfield of Drake join us to discuss the politics of gun violence. Also, an update on the 2016 presidential race regarding statements the candidates have made on gun violence and other issues less than 1 month before the Iowa caucuses. Gun owners, gun opponents, do you support the president's executive actions? Join the conversation. First, this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics Wednesday has arrived, and we are 20-some days away from the Iowa caucuses, 2016 Iowa caucuses on February 1st. But who's counting the days? Well, I'll tell you, a couple people. Rachel Caulfield is one of our guests, associate professor in the Department of Political Science, associate director of the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement at Drake University. Rachel, thanks for coming into our Des Moines studio.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Stephen Schmidt with us as well, university professor of political science at Iowa State University. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
Did you have an answer, either of you, the number of days were 25, 26, something like that? But
we are counting.
We are counting. We don't have that number.
There are a lot of people counting, and yet somehow or another I don't have it.
We want to talk more generally about the presidential race, but first of all, let's get your reaction, your analysis to the president's announcement yesterday. He appeared in the East Room of the White House, prepared to announce modest new restrictions on gun sales across the country. However, what he had to say quickly turned into one of the most emotional public experiences of his presidency. It was a 37-minute speech, and the president eulogized those lost to gun violence. He was flanked by more than a dozen men and women, many of whom he had consoled shortly after they'd lost loved ones to gun violence. He addressed political failure regarding guns, and at moments he delivered a constitutional lecture of sorts on the Second Amendment. The president also cried when he recalled the nearly two dozen children killed 3 years ago at Sandy Hook in Connecticut.
Every time I think about those kids, it gets me mad. And by the way, it happens on the streets of Chicago every day.
The president then announced executive actions, new curbs, he said, because guns have cut short too many American lives. Stephen Schmidt, let me go to you. What exactly did you see in these actions? And I understand there's a distinction here to be made. Not executive orders, executive actions.
Well, you know, this is the battle of which this is the latest confrontation between those who believe that the president has very limited powers and that nothing can be done unless Congress votes on it, and a president who has given up on being able to get things through Congress and is using what he sees as executive privilege, various different tools of the executive branch, which can be exercised independently of Congress. And it's a constitutional issue. You know, the Republicans keep screaming that all of this is unconstitutional. That would have to be determined by the Supreme Court. As long as Obama does this, it can be implemented until challenged in the court, and that won't happen before his term is over. And of course, the other thing is their promise that if he can exercise the irony of it, the hypocrisy is if he can exercise the executive pen and create these various initiatives, when they're elected president, by God, they're going to sign executive orders night and day to reverse all of Obama's executive orders. So I'm not sure what is constitutional, and that's what this is.
Mm-hmm. Rachel, I understand this document, what he announced yesterday, mostly restates existing case law, doesn't really break any new legal ground. The centerpiece of what he announced was the issuing of a guidance document on which gun sales require a gun. They require a firearms license, a federal firearms license, and therefore subjected to criminal background checks. So this is gun shows. This is the loop, closing the loophole, right?
Right. So individuals who sell guns at gun shows, this is, you know, basically small gun dealers, have not until now, been required to license with the government or to be licensed by the government, nor are they required to keep records on those sales. And so basically what Obama signed is it's a clarifying document that just indicates how the government will be, how the federal government will be interpreting existing policy. By saying that, you know, these folks will now also be covered by the requirements. They do have to be licensed and they do have to keep records on those gun sales and they do have to complete background checks.
Mm-hmm. What do you see as those opposing these actions? Rachel, what do you see as the options they have or most likely options that they'll take?
Well, there are certainly a lot of proposals being tossed around in the press right now as Republicans are decrying Obama's actions. So, you know, I think as they have done in the past, I think we're likely to see some lawsuits filed. Those, as Stefan has indicated and any number of other people have said as well, those could take forever to get through the courts. And so those are long-term strategies. On a shorter-term basis, there has been a suggestion that Congress could effectively act to take funding away from the Department of Justice so that any additional personnel that Obama has indicated would be hired to support this new interpretation, that they would not be able to be hired.
So this would be extra funding. You don't block the entire Department of Justice. You block extra people just for this action.
Right. Well, and it's a little unclear. You know, they're sorting this out, I think, right now and trying to figure out what their options are, because they did just pass a major new spending bill that funds government agencies through next September. So it would now take a proactive step to defund any government agency.
I want to reach out to our listeners and ask you, do you support the president's executive actions to curb gun violence that were announced yesterday? Let us know. Perhaps you're a gun owner. Perhaps you're a member of the NRA. Perhaps you oppose guns. We want to know your opinion, especially what type of legislation you think could make a difference in reducing the gun violence in this country. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Looking to our congressional delegation, freshman Senator Ernst, her release, a couple quotes from it: "I'm opposed to President Obama's overreaching and unilateral actions. The American people should have a voice in this process instead of the president's top-down approach that sidesteps Congress and the people we were elected to represent." Senator Grassley, with a more nuanced response, I'd have to say, part of it over the course of the next few days, writes Senator Grassley, "We'll be taking a deep look at the president's proposals with an eye toward ensuring the Second Amendment is preserved. Of course, the devil will be in the details of the regulations that he's proposing." And he reminds us, history has taught us that simply focusing on limiting access to guns does not lead to drops in gun violence. In his release, also mentioning that he offers a comprehensive proposal. In 2013, he offered this. And again, late last year, focusing on mental health, straw purchases, and illicit trafficking, both times with bipartisan support. So does this break down, Stefan, along party lines mostly? But we're seeing also within our two senators there some degrees.
Well, yeah, there are degrees. The irony of the whole thing is that when people say, well, Congress needs to do this, the American people need to have Congress take the action. But the Congress doesn't want to take any action, so the American people are never going to get any action on this because the Congress is scared to death of the NRA and of other gun organizations, the gun manufacturing lobby, which is very powerful. And so it's essentially facetious to say that the American people are the ones who need to determine this when the polls show that a very significant majority of Americans, including a huge significant majority of Republicans, want some of the things that were announced. They don't want bad guys and terrorists and others to be able to buy guns, and they don't want people with serious mental illness to have access to guns. So we're in a situation in which public opinion is vastly on the side of the kinds of things that Obama talked about.
Vastly? How vastly? Do you have numbers?
Huge. You've seen the numbers. I don't have them in front of me.
I think 80-90%.
Yeah, exactly.
Also among Republicans,
exactly.
The majority.
That's right. It's an overwhelming majority. But, you know, politicians are not accountable to majority public opinion. The voters don't pay that much attention. They keep voting the same people in, whether they vote the way the voters would like them to or not. The political system is really very broken. And in fact, of course, with gun regulation and so on, it is a fantasy to think that any of these would alleviate all but a few cases because, you know, the guy out in California who went in and bought some guns legally, everything was just fine. He just handed them over to his friend who then went and shot all those people. Mm-hmm. And none of these laws would have checked that. I mean, you can still buy a gun legally from a licensed dealer, have a background check on yourself, and then you can hand that gun to somebody else who can commit an act with it. So, you know, guns do kill people. People also kill people.
Political analysis from Stephen Schmidt of Iowa State University and Rachel Caulfield of Drake University on this Politics Wednesday edition of River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer. If you'd like to join our conversation with your view on the president's executive actions to curb gun violence announced yesterday at the White House, 1-866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, Iowa Public Radio, also on Facebook, where you can leave a question or a comment. Let's go, first of all, to Danielle in Woodward. Danielle, what is your view?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure
I am
thing.
A gun owner. I have a gun in every room of the house except the bathroom. I'm a former hunter safety instructor in two states. I am totally in favor of more strict gun laws. Hmm. We have turned into a sick society. We've been taken over by the NRA and the politicians whom they have bought. My being a rural resident and a gun owner and a responsible gun owner is my perspective, and I'm infuriated by the politicians who are bending to the NRA. I want our children to be safe.
You're a gun owner. Are you a member of the NRA?
Absolutely not. But when I bought my latest shotgun, I was inundated by this inflammatory political rhetoric by now a convicted felon, Kent Sorensen, who was a former member of Iowa's delegation. He was one who was sending letters about they're going to take away your guns.
Mm-hmm.
At no time have I been threatened that my guns will be taken away.
I guess here's a key question, Danielle. We've got a lot of other responses we want to get to,
sure.
But the president mentioned yesterday, he says, you know, after dealing with this for years, nothing will happen until people who want more restrictions on guns are as organized, at least as organized as the NRA. How are you, or are you, making your voice heard?
Well, I
as a gun owner,
as a gun owner, Kelly, astronaut Kelly, whose wife was shot, has an organization. I intend to follow through with supporting that organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's pointless to talk to my current delegation in Washington. They have been bought by the NRA, including Senator Ernst. They are not responsive. I agree with Stefan when he said a majority of the public opinion does not rule. It's money that's talking.
Okay. Danielle.
All I can do is talk to my neighbors.
Thank you for giving us your opinion. Danielle in Woodward says she has a gun in every room of her house. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Stefan, so there we see a prime example of the you know, the difference of opinion not matching up with what we're seeing in politics in Washington. So any breakthrough? The president says not during his time, huh?
No, there's no breakthrough. Congress is not going to take this up. They are going to resist any gun control because, in fact, on the one hand, many of the incidents that we've seen, I mean, you have military guys with military passes who are active in the armed services, therefore entitled to have firearms going into military bases and killing people. How are you going to write gun laws that will disarm them? You know, so it is, we are in a conundrum, in a dilemma that is enormous and seems, frankly, insoluble.
Garen tweeting, he's listening to our program. Garen tweets, how about fewer laws, enforce the current ones? Senator Ernst made that point in her release in reaction to the president's announcement. She wrote, there are laws currently in place to prevent firearms from getting into the wrong hands, and we must ensure that they are being and forced. Rachel Caulfield, are we enforcing these gun laws?
Well, I think one of the things that Obama's executive actions are actually intended to do, and you've heard this from some of his aides, is to look at the restrictions that are currently there and to eliminate loopholes so that those regulations can be enforced and can be enforced fairly. I think one of the really interesting things that we're seeing come out of this is a discussion about mental health services. You're seeing a lot of the responses to Obama's actions. They explicitly center on expanding mental health services rather than changing either the existing regulations or the level of enforcement of those regulations. And instead, they're shifting the dialogue to discuss mental health in the United States and to put forward proposals for mental health. I think that's actually an issue where we can find a good deal of agreement across party lines. It doesn't fundamentally solve, you know, the issue of who has a gun, but it does address one piece of the debate that we're having about guns.
But you know,
and could ultimately, I think, lead to some interesting reforms.
But it really doesn't, because we have laws in this country that enforce strict privacy in relationships between doctors and psychiatrists and others and their patients. And those laws would have to be changed. We would have to totally change our approach to mental illness and make it a piece of this equation. We are gridlocked and frozen in place by all kinds of laws that make privacy so important that, as you know, we can't really do it.
For example, there's a proposal from a representative out of Pennsylvania that's been put forward right now that would expand significantly the number of facilities and beds in facilities that would be available for the mentally ill. Right now, essentially, our prison system is our mental health system. And so expanding those services could be useful.
Okay, let's go back to our phones. Rachel Caulfield of Drake University, Stephen Schmidt of Iowa State University. Andrew is joining us in Waterloo. Andrew, I see on my screen that you are a veteran. Thank you for your service to our country, and welcome to the program.
No problem. Thank you. I guess my thing is, with this whole gun control thing, is if they're going to start doing background checks, I'm a disabled veteran because of PTSD. I am 70% disabled on that. Mm. And that's public knowledge because I had to sign a waiver that allows the government to transfer that knowledge. So if they do a background check, that's going to come up. Mm-hmm. And that technically means I'm mentally disabled. But I've never wanted to shoot up a school or do anything like that. So would I be allowed to buy a gun? Like,
wow.
Is that even?
Yeah. A real question there, a disabled veteran due to PTSD that you want to retain your right to have a gun, right? Andrew, are you a gun owner?
I am. I own multiple guns, but because of PTSD, if they're going to blame mental health for all of this, according to the military and according to the VA, I'm mentally disabled.
Mm-hmm. So, Andrew, are you making your voice heard besides on public radio? Are you making it heard to your representatives?
I don't even know how to contact my representative, and because I'm still currently active in the military, that would probably cause problems, right? Consider jumping.
Oops.
Okay. Andrew in Waterloo, thank you for your input.
Yep, thank you.
1-866-780-9100. Wow. Interesting there, Stefan.
Incredibly interesting, and it shows you the complexity of it. I have a good friend who is a member of the Iowa legislature with whom I've been on various panels about Second Amendment rights, and he believes that there really is no such thing as mental illness. And he believes that he says, you know, most of my friends are crazy. You know, you could say they're crazy, he says, and I wouldn't want to take their guns away. So he doesn't trust psychiatrists or psychologists, and he says, how do you know if somebody is crazy or mentally ill? And therefore should have their gun rights taken away. So there is another dimension of this that I think we don't talk about very much, and that is that there are a lot of people who just don't know how to, I guess, diagnose or think that we don't know how to diagnose mental illness, much less a mental condition, a condition like PTSD, whether that disqualifies you or not from owning a firearm. I mean, some of the people that use firearms are not mentally ill. They're just mad, or they're members of gangs, and they fire at each other at at bars and clubs. And those people aren't crazy. Those people are just, you know, rough, tough people who carry a lot of firearms around and settle their issues with firearms.
Okay. Yeah. As expected, the NRA tore into the president's emotional plea for action against gun violence yesterday, calling his remarks condescending. In their release, Obama's contempt for the Second Amendment, they say, is turning law-abiding gun owners into scapegoats for mass shootings. One of the NRA's top lobbyists. Let's go to Des Moines. Back to our phone, Steve in Des Moines. Thank you for waiting, Steve. We are coming up on a break, but please, what's your question or comment?
Well, I'm an avid hunter, and I would like to say that I support what the president's got going on. I've never once thought of my guns of anything less than killing machines. I shoot pheasants, deer, turkey, everything in between. Their only purpose for me is to go out and kill things with them. And I see that with a lot of guns, especially assault weapons. Those guns are meant for war, not to be in the hands of everybody that can get them, not to be so freely available on the market. There needs to be restrictions on these guns, especially the assault-style rifles.
You undoubtedly, Steve, have a circle of friends, of fellow hunters you go out with. Can you give us a sense, for those of us who are not hunters, of what are the divisions within hunters? Is this talked about when you go out and hunt? Do you, as someone who would support gun legislation to some degree, do you dare mention this support of gun legislation?
I do, and my friends say that my uncle last weekend actually said, well, they'll take your automatic. I got a Benelli auto loader shotgun. Well, they'll take your semi-automatic shotgun away. I said, well, you know, if that happened to be the case, that it come restricted to that, I think I could give up my gun to save somebody else's life across the country to stop somebody else from having an automatic weapon to go in and take other people's lives like this. Something I noticed myself, other than just the fact that my friends think I'm crazy for wanting to take guns away from people, is how since the gun ban, the Brady Bill, since that had twilighted, and the market has just been overwhelmed with these giant clips. And so many times I go out, used to be we had a late rifle season in Iowa. You go down southern Iowa, and there's guys down there acting like they're at war. Because I'm not joking, 30-round clips on military-style rifles go out hunting. Anybody's preaching that that's okay has got some problems with their hunting theories and maybe their whole mentality about going out hunting. It's more of a one-shot, one-kill type of deal.
That's a gun you have for Armageddon, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a hunting gun. And for these gun manufacturers to keep playing off the Bushmaster AR-15, it's a hunting gun. No, it's an assault rifle. It's got its main purpose. The whole reason it was invented was to kill people at war.
Okay,
and
Steve.
I think it's great that we're restricting these things.
Okay, Steve, in Des Moines, avid hunter supporting the president's agenda. We're talking about that. We want to talk more generally about the 2016 race as well when we come back. Great response today. It's what the show is all about, is interacting with Iowa Public Radio listeners about topical news items. And the president's executive actions announced yesterday, the item we're dealing with for a large part of this program, with Rachel Caulfield of Drake University, Stephen Schmidt of Iowa State University. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation, but also get into some other happenings in the 2016 race as we are inside 1 month before the February 1st caucuses. 1-866-780-9100. I'm Ben Kiefer, back with Stephen Schmidt and Rachel Caulfield here on River to River in just a moment. It's Iowa Public Radio News. It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, along with Rachel Caulfield of Drake University and Stephen Schmidt of Iowa State University, our analysts for this week, as we primarily discuss the president's executive actions announced yesterday when he appeared in the White House, gave a very emotional 37-minute speech, and announced a number of executive actions, the centerpiece of which was the issuing of a guidance document, which says that gun sales require a federal firearms license and therefore are subjected to criminal background checks. Join our conversation. Do you support the president's executive actions? 1-866-780-9100. How is this issue playing out against the backdrop of this 2016 presidential race? Well, let's get a few voices here to to pepper that with some actual audio. GOP presidential candidate, poll leader Donald Trump said at a Mississippi rally on Sunday, this is before the president announced his remarks. Here's what he had to say about it.
So he's going to sign another executive order having to do with the Second Amendment, having to do with guns. I will veto that. I will unsign that so fast. So fast.
Ted Cruz, another leader in the polls here in Iowa on the GOP side, had this to say about the president's proposal.
This morning, President Obama is announcing new executive orders to try to go after our Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. Well, I can tell you right now, those executive orders are not worth the paper they're printed on, because when you live by the pen, you die by the pen, and my pen has got an eraser.
Okay, let's jump over to the Democratic side. Hillary Clinton making these comments yesterday at a campaign stop. Just a note, the applause has been shortened here.
And I am very proud of President Obama's announcement today to try to have some sensible gun safety measures to protect the American people. In fact, I feel really good because I called for some of those measures a couple of months ago.
Okay, Hillary Clinton there. Let's talk. Give us your sense, Rachel Caulfield. Is this issue going to be a major issue in the 2016 presidential race? Will it be something that will be the deciding issue for many people?
I think it's too early to know if it'll be a deciding issue, but it's certainly an issue, and it's certainly an issue that that plays well across a lot of different constituencies. So, you know, we've talked about the NRA a little bit, but the NRA, you know, this is an organization that is exceptionally well organized. It's been exceptionally well organized for many, many years. It's got supporters across every state in the union. And those supporters are avid supporters. They know how the NRA wants them to vote, and the NRA does a good job of communicating very clearly who the preferred candidates are. And so in that sense, it has a good deal of, you know, good deal of sway, I think, in the electoral context. And this is, I think, what Obama was trying to say. You know, the NRA is exceptionally well organized, but it is really hard to organize a group of people, and particularly a group of people as diverse as the group of people who are seeking more gun control. And there are some smaller gun control organizations, and particularly some new organizations that have popped up. And it's certainly a point of campaign rhetoric whether or not gun control advocates are going to be nearly as effective is doubtful.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to our phones. Scott in Waterloo, you dial 1-866-780-9100. Hi, Scott. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a problem with the way that this is portrayed. Everybody keeps talking about a gun show loophole, and I've been going to gun shows for 30 years. There is no gun show loophole. There's not a gun show in Iowa where you can go and purchase a gun without a background check. Ever since they started the InstaCheck under Clinton, it is it's an instant background check, and everybody gets checked. Now, the one thing that I like about the executive order is he said he would help the background check make it more efficient and supposedly hire more people, which would be a good thing because sometimes you're at a gun show and you have to wait 2 or 3 hours to buy a gun. But there's no, and I've bought guns on the internet and I've sold guns on the internet, and they all go through FFLs. Mm-hmm. There's no way around it.
Now, I understand now, tell me if this checks out with what you know about this, Scott, having been someone who's frequented gun shows for many years. Is it correct that Iowa regulates purchases, according to our information, by prohibiting private dealers from selling to individuals who do not have licenses and permits that they obtain after background checks are conducted? Iowa is one of 8 states to do so. So Iowa's a bit of an exception here.
Okay. And I know there's other states have other regulations. I can only talk about Iowa's, but it's the same thing as buying on the internet.
Okay.
I've bought guns from several states, and they all have to go through an FFL. You can't ship it over the internet without an FFL.
How many guns? Can I ask how many guns you own, Scott?
Oh, I don't know.
Roughly
10, 10 probably.
Mm-hmm. Is there a gun legislation you would support? You think that other gun owners would support universal background checks?
Yeah, if you Google Wayne LaPierre's remarks to Obama's orders, he spells out exactly. NRA has been pushing, I'm a lifetime member, and NRA has been pushing mental health initiatives for several years, and which you guys have already discussed. It's a hard thing to do, because how do you do it while keeping people's privacy and the laws that protect their privacy?
Scott, thank you for your views. Stefan, do you have a reaction to Scott's?
Yeah, I mean, I think the people who want to use guns illegally and kill people with them are not going to buy them legitimately. They're going to steal them. They're going to get them on the black market. You know, there's a black market for everything. I mean, we have laws that prohibit the purchase and sale of heroin, don't we? Are there any heroin dealers in this country? And are there millions of people using heroin? And is there a heroin epidemic that even the presidential candidates in New Hampshire are spilling, you know, their souls out about their children and family members using heroin? And it's illegal. It's not even legal and to be licensed. It's totally illegal, and we're not enforcing those laws. And so it's all absurd. Bad people and people who want to break the law and do things that are illegal will do it. And no presidential executive orders or extra agents or anything are going to stop those people from obtaining firearms.
Let's go back to a remark President Obama made near the end of his 37-minute speech yesterday, giving it some historical perspective, discussing the timing of reform. In this clip, I want to remind you, pauses have been shortened for time's sake.
And it won't happen overnight. It won't happen during this Congress. It won't happen during my presidency. But a lot of things don't happen overnight. A woman's right to vote didn't happen overnight. The liberation of African Americans didn't happen overnight. LGBT rights, that was decades worth of work. So just because it's hard, that's no excuse not to try.
Rachel Caulfield, would you put it in the same category as the president puts civil rights, LGBT rights, and so forth?
Well, it's certainly, you know, I mean, he's recognizing something that's essential, which is that anytime you're talking about broad cultural change, which is really what he's talking about, you're talking about a long-term, a long-term project. In this case, talking about civil rights is about the individual rights of, expanding individual rights for citizens. And I think gun control is, while it is still a cultural shift that Obama is seeking, it's a little bit, it's in a different category fundamentally. It's about expanding government regulation rather than expanding individual rights.
Rachel Caulfield with us of Drake University, Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University. We have just over 10 minutes left of our program. I wanted to move on to get your thoughts, your analysis of the 2016 race, as we are less than a month away from the Iowa caucuses.
We are 26 days, I counted.
you took the break time to answer the question.
Yes.
26. See, that was, I was thinking it was 26, 25, mm-hmm. something like that. Rachel, let me start off with you and then go to Stefan. What are your thoughts? How are you seeing the races in the major parties shaping up here in Iowa?
Well, this is, first of all, this is the fun time, right? This is always, the last month is I think, always the time when we see a good deal of movement. And so, all eyes are very clearly on Iowa. We have candidates around every corner, quite literally. If you take a look at any map of candidate visits right now, they are everywhere. You have, I think, fundamentally in the party, in the Republican Party, you have a really interesting, clash between the mainstream of the party and two leading candidates right now, neither one of whom are favored by the mainstream of the Republican Party, and who have really tried very carefully not to step on each other's toes for the past several months.
Donald Trump and Ted Cruz.
Yeah, and are taking each other on now in a new way. So I think that's been really interesting to watch, and I suspect we'll see a lot more of that over the next 26 days. On the Democratic side, I think the big question that everybody's looking for is, is Bernie Sanders the equivalent of Howard Dean? Is this a, date Sanders, marry Clinton.
Okay, I think I followed that.
Oh, that was right. It was a yeah. Okay. Date Dean, marry Kerry. So, you know, we'll see if voters, as we get closer to the caucus, if the Sanders supporters continue to stay with Sanders, or if they start to evaluate Clinton as more viable, and therefore they switch their vote.
26 days out, what are your thoughts, Stephen Schmidt?
Well, that was interesting analysis. I would add that Bernie Sanders supporters are extremely passionate that his fundraising is, if not surprising, I think even shocking, that he should come as close to raising millions and millions of dollars from millions of small donors as Hillary Clinton, who is a money machine and is connected to every major big money interest and super PAC that there is. That's a surprise, and I don't think any Bernie Sanders people are going to defect before or during caucus night. I think that his turnout is going to be huge because students will be back this time February 1st, whereas other caucuses, we've talked about this, the caucuses took place when college students were still on vacation on Christmas break, and that could have a huge effect. I would say that
I agree with that.
You know, she's not necessarily Howard Dean. I think she could be Barack Obama. You know, he mobilized those young voters, and they did turn out for the caucuses, mm-hmm. which young voters generally don't do. And the ones I've talked to, believe me, you know, they seem to be really intent on showing up on caucus night. I think the poll numbers could be a little wrong. I think he could come closer or even win in Iowa. Mm. And so it's going to be a very intense race on that side. I think on the other side, the biggest question, of course, is are there really two front runners who will finish across the line in that order on caucus night? Or is Donald Trump's support enthusiastic but not necessarily well-organized? Does he have a ground army? Does he have 1,700 precinct captains in every precinct in Iowa who are going to steer people to him and talk on his behalf? Or is it going to be more volunteers who may or may not show up and may or may not organize? And so if that happens, the results could be somewhat different from what the polls are.
Mm-hmm. Donald Trump, a milestone for him this week. He's received, of course, a lot of free publicity from the media, but he issued his first television ad of the 2016 presidential campaign, characteristically brutal, blunt in its message. Trump plans to cut off the head of ISIS and take their oil, build that wall on the southern border, and make Mexico pay for it. Well, let's just have a listen to it. It's just 30 seconds long.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
The politicians can pretend it's something else, but Donald Trump calls it radical Islamic terrorism. That's why he's calling for a temporary shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until we can figure out what's going on. He'll quickly cut the head off ISIS and take their oil. And he'll stop illegal immigration by building a wall on our southern border that Mexico will pay for.
We will make America great again.
Donald Trump's first television ad of the 2016 race, an ad sent to run extensively in Iowa and New Hampshire. Your thoughts on the Donald Trump? It seems Donald Trump versus Ted Cruz, or who else, Rachel?
Well, you know, I've heard some people say that Chris Christie's going to emerge in the final days because he has the Branstad machine behind him. I haven't seen any indication that he's moving fast. At this point, I do think it's always, you know, we should always be keeping our eye out for that last surge of momentum.
Right.
Because it matters in Iowa.
Right. Turnout is what we're talking
about.
Yeah. We have all the work of all these campaigns coming down to the next few weeks, whether the supporters can be turned out. Jennifer Jacobs of the Des Moines Register wrote an interesting article about this. Some GOP strategists he interviewed, maybe she talked to both of you, I think turnout for the caucuses might be in the 140,000 range. And if you have no way to judge that, that's 15% higher than the 2012 caucuses. You agree, Stephen? A high turnout?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine. I can't imagine in this environment how both parties will not have record-breaking turnouts, and not 140,000. I mean, the Democrats had 230,000, I think, in 2008, because Barack Obama Hillary Clinton and to some extent Edwards just lit the voters on fire and they wanted to come. Mm-hmm. And that is certainly true with in both parties right now. The Republicans want to save their party, or some Republicans want to tear it apart and create a new party, and they're going to show up. So I think it's going to be an incredible night. It could overwhelm the reporting mechanisms, hopefully not too much. But I think it's going to be really a landmark historic caucus this year.
Mm-hmm. So this is interesting. A big question mark here. Would you agree, Rachel, that the Trump people, we're talking about the new Trump people. How should we understand that these are people who've never participated in caucuses?
Well, some of them. Yeah. And if you go to a Trump rally, it's interesting to meet some of the folks who are there. These are not, you know, these are people who are frustrated with politics. They're not people who go out and vote regularly. They're not the party faithful. They're not the party activists. They are people who are angry and frustrated and trying to figure out what to do with that anger and frustration. And Donald Trump has really given them a vehicle to express it. And as Stefan indicated, I think a lot of people are keeping an eye on this. The question is whether or not the Trump campaign has the organizational chops to get those people not just to a caucus, but do they have the organizational chops to have, you know, their precinct caucus or their precinct captains lined up? Do they know what they're doing at the caucus?
Can
do
we
they,
know that, you know, before caucus night?
It's going to be hard to know. I mean, they are holding precinct captain trainings right now. They have their commit to caucus cards out at events. Yeah, and there are clearly people on the campaign who understand what an organizational effort looks like in Iowa.
Your word on turnout, Stefan, here, the campaign, and how do you measure as a political analyst who's got the ground game out there that will actually deliver those that support?
Well, we've seen, you know, numbers of staff that people have, how many individuals they are deploying around the state, whether they have a budget specifically for the development of voter recruitment for precinct night or not. And so those numbers can tell you something. But the Trump supporters, I think, maybe are a little different. I think some of them will show up whether or not someone directs them, trains them, or tells them to go, because he seems to really have this set on fire, a very huge number of people. And so they could become first-time voters, or he could attract people who are actual caucus attendees and who like someone who, quote, tells it like it is and isn't politically correct, regardless of how he does it or how controversial it is. The one thing that surprises me is that we haven't really seen anyone discuss agriculture very much. You know, the front runner right now is a Texan who favors oil, is opposed to ethanol, is opposed to corn and subsidies for Iowa's major agricultural production system. And yet he has Steve King supporting him, and no one has pushed back on that, apparently, here in Iowa. So Ted Cruz is getting away with something here.
Mm-hmm. And do you see it that way, too, Rachel? Are you surprised at the lack of debate over agricultural issues in a big way? I'm sure they're being discussed at the individual appearances of the candidates. But as Stefan says, not a dominant theme.
Not a dominant theme. And I think, you know, around the state, particularly at rural events, certainly candidates are getting questions about it, and most candidates are, you know, lining up pretty in pretty traditional ways, exactly where you would expect them to be. The big exception is Ted Cruz.
And he's ahead.
And he's ahead, yeah, and he's doing well.
How's
so, you know, if he can maintain that lead, he's let's face it, this year has been a year that has already given us reason to question conventional wisdom.
in many ways, we've got about a minute left. You know, it wasn't too many weeks ago when we were saying foreign policy, terrorism was the number one issue, replacing the economy. Do you still see it that way, Stefan?
Yes, I do.
You do. And that favors, I mean, didn't
it
seem
favors
to favor
anyone who wants to bomb the hell out of ISIS.
You know, as long as the rhetoric's there.
The rhetoric, yeah.
The rhetoric is there. Rachel? Yeah.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, this is an issue that that Republicans in particular have really seized upon as one advantage. So it's in the interest of the candidates, I think, to keep it front and center. So if you go to campaign events, they're talking about it a lot and they're getting questions about it. So I think it stays front and center, you know, absent some huge new development in the next 3 weeks.
Okay, well, we have just a few seconds left. What are your question or two that you'll have going forward in the next few weeks, Stefan?
Well, my biggest question is whether Trump is going to have an organizational strategy as well as this magic sauce that has attracted so many people to him.
Okay, Rachel, your question?
I have a couple questions.
Sure.
Some are it's things that I'm watching, I guess. This new reporting system that the parties have put together with Microsoft. I'm really curious to see how that functions on caucus night. Yeah. This is either going to be the most transparent and well-reported caucus that we've ever seen in Iowa history, or it could be a complete disaster. I'm also keeping an eye on those college students who are going to be here.
Yep. Rachel Caulfield of Drake University and Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Quick note that tomorrow on this program, a conversation with Governor Terry Branstad. We hope you'll tune in for that and join the conversation with the governor tomorrow at this time on River to River. River to River, produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.